Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What does it mean to preach Christ? It's a phrase that we've probably heard as we read through the New Testament. Paul talks about preaching Christ in, for example, in 1 Corinthians. He's writing his letter to the Corinthians, and he says to them, the gospel is foolishness. The message of the cross, it seems like weakness, but actually it's the strength and the wisdom of God. And he talks about that in chapter 1. He keeps going, and he says, not many of you were wise or noble or powerful or whatever. You're not impressive either, so don't get too carried away. But actually, my ministry wasn't too impressive. And so at the start of chapter 2, he's talking about his ministry, showing that it fits with the nature of the message of the cross. It's not impressive by human standards, but it's exactly what people need. And so while the Corinthians were looking at Paul and saying, oh, Paul, you're not very impressive. We know what good speaking is. You don't do it. Paul's looking from a perspective that's the right way up. They've got it upside down. They assume that's normal. Paul's putting it the right way up and saying, no, what you need is Christ and him crucified. That's the message that he determined to preach amongst them. Think about another example in Galatians. In the letter to the Galatians, Paul addresses a situation that was really serious. He'd been there, he'd been traveling through Turkey, he'd preached the gospel, the church had started. They'd come to Christ, things were going well, but as soon as he left, false teachers came through. And the false teachers had a kind of a simple message, really. Paul, nice, he's a nice chap, but don't take him too seriously. He's not a real apostle, he's like a mini apostle. The real apostles are the Jerusalem ones. Oh, and we represent them. Oh, and his message, it's good. It's good as far as it goes, but it's inadequate. It's incomplete. You want the real message. The real message we've known forever is that you don't have a complete package if you focus on grace. You've got to balance that with law. You need to be circumcised to get in. You need to keep the law to grow up. And so these people were coming in, and these young Christians were kind of confused, kind of drawn to that. It made sense to them. Why? Because they're living in an upside down world that seemed normal, and the message that was coming in was an upside down message. Therefore, it seemed to make sense. And Paul was the one who'd come in with the right way up message, a radical message. And so Paul, as he's writing to these Galatians, he's angry, not against them, but he's angry with the situation. He's concerned for them. And in chapter 3, he says to them, oh, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? Who has cast a spell on you? And then he describes his ministry. He says, it was before your very eyes that Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified. Jesus and him crucified. That was his message. It's like he's describing a huge poster. One of those posters on the side of a huge building, the ultimate advertising space, right? And it's like Paul's saying, when I was in your church, that's what I did. I put up this huge poster, and it was Christ crucified. And then he goes on in the next two verses, and he's kind of scratching his head, and he's saying, you're so foolish that having begun by the Spirit or by faith, you're now going to become mature. You're going to grow by law or by the flesh? That doesn't make sense. And so that's a key passage for us, because the danger is that as we think about preaching Christ, we'll say, yeah, that's good as far as it goes, but we also need to balance it. And by balancing it, what we often do is we turn the whole paradigm wrong way up, back to the upside down. So let's explore that. What does it mean? What's right way up? What's upside down? And what does it mean to preach Christ? For that, I think we need to go back, to the very beginning. Back to Genesis 1, 2, 3. That's where reality gets turned upside down. A colleague of mine used the illustration of a cruise liner that was leaving a port. And as it was leaving the port, it had some strange catastrophe. and it capsized. And it turned all the way over. And initially, the people inside thought, this is very strange. But nobody came to rescue them, and things carried on, and they got used to it. The tables were lights attached to the floor. The doors had to be climbed over to go to another room. But it became normal. It became their new normal. And that's what happens in reality in Genesis 3. What was the right way is turned upside down. What was focused in the right direction gets curved in to the wrong direction. Genesis 1 and 2 were created in the image of God. Male and female were created in His, our image. And as you read through that, you see there's a very relational sense to that. As you go through into chapter 2, the only thing that is not good is that Adam is alone. That's not good. Everything else was good, 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 good. All the way through, it seems to be somewhat, I don't want to say technical, because that could imply all sorts of things that I'm not really talking about, but it does seem kind of factual and orderly. It just kind of progresses. And then you get to the end of 2, and you come to the climactic moment of Genesis 1 and 2, the high point. And it's the moment when Eve is brought to Adam and presented to him. And what's Adam's response? Years ago, I was at Bible school. In fact, it was the very first week at Bible school, first day, first class. And we had a teacher who was explaining to us Genesis 1, 2, I don't think he even got into 3 in that lecture. But he got to this point, he said, it's very important that we understand Adam's response to seeing Eve in the Hebrew. We all got excited, right? Hebrew, wow, I'm at Bible school, I'm going to get some Hebrew. So we all had our pens ready and we were waiting for it. And he said, okay, you ready for it? I'm going to give it to you in the Hebrew. This is what Adam said when he saw Eve. Oh, this is going to be great, this is going to be great. And then he said, yabba dabba do. Half the class were like, yabba. Hang on a minute, that's not Hebrew. But that's the point. The moment Eve is brought to Adam, he just goes, oh, wow. She's amazing. She's beautiful. I've never seen anything like that. Bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She's brought out of me. Let's call her a woman. Let's make the connection. And it says that they were naked and they were not ashamed. The climax, the pinnacle, the high point of the whole creation account is the moment that the marriage occurs, which makes sense when you read the rest of Scripture and you see God's passion for relationship, the nature of God as Trinity, God's desire to be in relationship with humanity. Think of the union that is the Trinity, Father and Son, united by the Spirit. Think of the union that is Christ, God the Son, becoming flesh, fully God, fully man, fully one. There's a union there of humanity and God, which then enables the third union of us with Christ, the marriage that Genesis 2 was pointing towards. Christ and the church, God and His people, united by the Spirit, brought into the family of the Trinity. Now, if that's all true, which I think it is, what would Jesus say if he was asked, Jesus, what's the most important commandment? Well, he'd give the obvious answer, wouldn't he? He'd give a Genesis 1 and 2 answer. Love God, love your neighbor. That's what life's about. That's what we're made for, to be in relationship with God and in relationship with one another. But what happens when you corrupt that? You come into Genesis 3 and the whole ship gets capsized. The whole world gets turned upside down. And that love God, love others design that was so perfect that they could be naked and they didn't even notice, that gets corrupted. Did God really say? Said the serpent. And Eve gets caught into this conversation and her gaze gets shifted from all the trees and all the fruit and all the blessing and all the goodness. And the gaze gets shifted to one tree and she starts focusing on that. God didn't. You're not going to die. Come on. You, in the day you eat of it, God knows you will become like God and knowing good and evil. And so she took the fruit and she ate it and she died. It wasn't the decision. It wasn't the act. It was that she wanted to, because the text points us there. Seeing the fruit was desirable to make one wise and attractive and so on. It was the look that drew her, and she was drawn from a loving, trusting God and a loving, trusting Adam to loving, trusting self. That does look good. I'm going to do what's best for me. And Adam stood next to her, joined in. Death. Instant response, instant reaction. They were naked and they were ashamed. And they covered up. Instant reaction was to fig leaf, as I call it, to cover up, to hide their inadequacy. Because really, it's pretty obvious if we stop to think about it. It's so obvious that subconsciously we know it. This is not a God. And yet I'm committed to the lie that I am. And therefore, I will hide my inadequacies, and I will pretend that I'm fine, and I will make everything about me, and the whole universe suddenly starts swirling around me at the center. The spirit is gone, the heart is dead towards God, and sin is in there, guilt and condemnation. This needs a solution. So what's the solution? Paul would say, simple, preach Christ. Christ and Him crucified. Why? Because that's the only answer. For the rest of our life, we can try and try and try to fix ourselves. But if we're absolutely sinful, doesn't mean we've done everything we could do or that we've done every bad thing that we could do, but actually, even the good things that we do, apart from Christ, apart from faith, are sin. So we can be religious, we can be good, we can be well-behaved, we can keep the rules, and we can be absolutely, totally, and utterly lost. And so we can never be the solution to our problem. And so, praise God, He brings the solution. He sends His Son. His Son comes into the world to reveal the Father to us and to reveal to us a glorious love. Think about the idea of glory. You trace the theme of glory through John's Gospel, and you discover that the glorification of the Son comes at His death. No. He died before He went to the glory. That's what we think. And of course, the glory does refer to the presence of God too and the heavenly reality. But in John's Gospel, it's the death that is the glorification of the Son. And therefore, the full revelation of the Father. This is what your God is like. Humble, self-humiliating, giving at absolute cost to Himself. He will give to draw you into relationship. We see it in the prodigal son, the father humiliating himself to bring the younger brother home, lavishing grace upon grace on his son. And you see the same father going out and begging the older brother, who rejects that love, rejects that graciousness, rejects the self-giving humiliation of the father. And so the gospel is all wrapped up in Christ and Him crucified, a presentation of a love, the only love that can draw us out of the love we're so practiced in. Ever since the day I was born, I love me. Mummy, feed me. I want that toy. I want that car. I want that career. If I can do that, and it's I. And I'm an expert. I mean, you may think that you're good at it. I'm better. I love me. we can all do that competitive thing because we're so gripped with self-love. What's going to draw us out from that? The Bible tells us we love God because He first loved us. It's only a greater love that can draw us out. And so Christ crucified is a presentation that can rock our world. Literally, it can turn our world right side up. And we suddenly realize, oh, what a fool we have been for these thousands of years. If that is how much You love me, I'm Yours. And we're drawn out, and the Spirit brings that in and points us to Christ, and we're given an appetite for Christ and so on. And the transformation that occurs is utter and complete eventually. But of course, we still have the flesh. And so there's a battle. We still find ourselves saying, I love You, Lord, but I kind of love this too. So life consists in a struggle between what we want versus what we want. Therefore, what does it mean to preach Christ? It means to offer the truth, the full revelation of the character of God in all the richness of His holiness and His perfection and His beauty, all of it wrapped together in the Trinity revealed by the Son hanging on a cross. I'm not saying we neglect anything. We preach the fullness of what Christ reveals to us. Now, what does that mean? That means that for those who are not saved, when we are preaching evangelistically, obviously we don't tell them to fix their lives and then offer them Christ. We offer them Christ, right? But be careful, because we so easily start adding in that it's up to them to make decisions and up to them to be committed and up to them, you know. Careful, Paul might get touchy at that. It's Christ that transforms. What about for believers? Oh, that's easy. Tell them what to do. Give them instruction. Instruct them to obey. No, hang on a second. Paul rejected that, didn't he? In Galatians, he said, that's foolish. That makes no sense. Because when we come to the end of a message, when we come to the end of a presentation, when we come to the end of a conversation, if people's gaze, if the direction they're looking in is toward themselves, we are feeding the upside-down world of a sinful, broken humanity. But if instead we've pointed them to Christ, there's hope. Maybe we've done a good job of preaching Christ and Him crucified. Now, practically, what does that mean? Does that mean that we will only ever preach certain passages? 1 Corinthians 2, you know, Galatians 3, the Gospels at the end. What about the parts of the Bible that aren't speaking of Christ crucified specifically? Or even more, what about the passages that aren't overtly speaking of Christ Himself? Do we ignore them? Do we superimpose something that isn't there? That's a whole other subject that's worth exploring. The reality is the Bible speaks so much of Christ. It's all about Him in some way or other. There's predictions, there's appearances, there's prophecies, there's themes fulfilled in Him. There's the big story of it, which all goes towards Him. So I'm not really going to get into the detail of that, but the real issue for me is this. When we preach, when we communicate, when we offer to people the gospel, when we're preaching Christ, are we offering a person? Is the focus the person Himself, or is the focus on the instructions and therefore back onto the listeners? That's the danger. The danger is that we take Genesis 3 people upside down, self-absorbed, and we give them instruction so that they can make a better job of it, so that they can fix themselves. That is upside down, and it is not helpful. We're feeding a Genesis 3 world with a Genesis 3 message, and the Bible does something entirely different. It invites us back, if you like, to a Genesis 1 and 2 world, or really to a Revelation 21 and 22 world, where Christ and His bride are united. And it's not self, it's not self-effort, it's looking to Him. When we go through the Scriptures, when we're reading them for ourselves, when we're presenting them to others, may the question on our hearts, on our minds, always be, Lord, I want to know You, I want to see You, I want You to show me more of You. Because if we corrupt that into what must I do? What's needed for me? What tip can You give me to live my life better? Then we've missed the point. And instead of preaching Christ, we're preaching tips for healthy living, or laws for dutiful Christianity, instead of preaching Christ, who brings transformation. Now think about it. We said that the problem in Genesis 3 was guilt. That needs to be addressed by our preaching, by our offer in the gospel. It's also heart death, stony hearts, heart dead toward God. It's also lack of the Spirit. Thankfully, the Bible invites us to see all three of those aspects offered, right? We have sins forgiven. We have hearts of stone replaced with beating hearts, with the law written on so that we desire to love God, know God, and please God. We have the Spirit that brings us into an intimate relationship with Christ, our bridegroom, so that with Him we can then cry out Abba to His Abba. There's an invitation into the Trinity, and that transforms lives. Problem that we have is that because we're so saturated in the upside down world, what we will tend to do is we will focus on the duties, the pressures, the burdens, the you must. Oh, I'm supposed to say Christ and Him crucified, so we say a little Christ and Him crucified, but you must. And lives do get changed, people do get saved, but I wonder if it's because we've given a little Christ and Him crucified. How much better to say Christ and Him crucified, to offer Christ and the fullness of who God is and all that He's done for us, and then the implications of that, because we're in an upside down world with our flesh pulling us away. Therefore, there are some instructions here. Walk in a manner worthy of the calling you've received. All the imperatives, all the instructions make sense in light of our union with Christ. So it's a sort of a simple paradigm, but I think it's an important one. That as we're preaching, as we're communicating, as we're gospeling one another, what we need to do is make sure that we recognize the need is to be drawn out of self and drawn to Him. Not reinforcing the self with religiosity, no matter how Christian it can sound. That was a heresy that Paul was ready to be angry against. And we need to be gripped by the gospel, by the reality of all that Christ has done, so that we are captivated by him and that spills over to others so that they say, oh, could it possibly be true that he loves me too? Drawn to him, we will see lives transformed. We will see holiness at a new level. And really, that is the hope for our world, preaching Christ and him crucified.